Say hi to spring's most amazing style steal at Old Navy. One day only, today. Women's tanks are just $2. And don't forget to come in now to redeem your super cash. Hurry in. High fashion, Old Navy. Valid 4/29, limit 5 per customer. Select styles in stores only.
Welcome to Golden State of Mindcast. Ivan Betker here with Nate Parham and Bram Kinchelow. The Warriors are just 2-1 since the last podcast. Does anybody want to talk about that Lakers loss? Like, is it, and that's a serious question because we could just totally skip over that one.
I mean, I think that the only thing that was of any merit from that game is going back and reading specifically Network's series of tweets about how wasted the Warriors all were and how Luke took them out to all the clubs in LA. And I mean, he might not be wrong. It was it was pretty funny. And I think that they actually did a whole podcast with the Silver Screen and Roll fellas after that. But yeah, I don't know. I think that they were not, obviously not mentally prepared for a very hungry Lakers team that was playing with a great sense of pride for the first time all season. And also just that it was such an early game and it was a Sunday after a Saturday night in LA. And, you know, starting at 12:30, one could see how that would lead to some problems if they had been out late. So
yeah, the LA thing, you would hope that's not actually an issue. Like, these guys are professionals and shouldn't be like, I mean, everybody's going to go out the night before, but you wouldn't think that, you know, that should have just so much of a factor in one single game. But it does seem to be the case every time they go to Los Angeles. Like, the at least the beginning of the game starts off a little slow, and this one, I mean, it was the 12:30 games as well. Like, they're never very good. Like, I wish ABC right. didn't have them that early, because players never really play very well, at least for the first half. And the Warriors just never even got to that second wind. They were just slow.
Well, I think and knowing that they were going to play a back-to-back against Magic, and just that it was just one of those things where, not that you'd ever look ahead and be like, oh, well, they're going to lose that game because of all the things we just said, but in retrospect, I was like, oh, yeah, totally. I could see that happening. I wish that it hadn't, but, you know, there it is. So.
Right. And then Draymond is said to be sick. I don't know if that was from that epic Saturday night. So he's been kind of scuffling the last couple games, and then Iguodala's been out. So it's been hard. Like, we talked about this a little bit on the last podcast about how, really, since the All-Star break, they haven't looked quite as dominant, and a lot of that is they've been on the road. A lot of that is, you know, probably some wear and tear and some injuries, and Klay hasn't been shooting threes very well, and you know, Draymond hasn't been shooting very well either. There's a bunch of factors, but like they kind of, that some of that shine is worn off, you know. Like, it doesn't feel like you enter a game and the Warriors are just going to dominate from, you know, from start, or, you know, dominate the first three quarters and then have their bench unit come in and just kind of muck around in the fourth.
Yeah. And, but, you know, the interesting thing is that they're, you know, I can't tell if they're just making fun of the media or Twitter or whatever, bloggers, or it's true, but, like, you know, they're openly admitting that this is a focus issue, that they're struggling to focus. So you don't actually normally hear a pro team say that at the extent that the Warriors do. So they're kind of saying, yeah, we're losing these games. Yeah, we're making a lot of turnovers. Yeah, we just can't focus. And I think this is something where we said this last podcast, but, you know, these seasons are long, and we're past the point now where, yes, the Spurs are still close, but we're past the point where, you know, a game against the Lakers on a Sunday afternoon really matters that much to them. And I think, I still believe they're going to lock it in the playoffs. I can't recall, you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, I can't recall a time in the playoffs last year where I really thought they took a game off. So, I mean, they lost games, but I think they lost games because they couldn't handle matchups against the Grizzlies and the Cavs in the finals. So, and they responded well to those matchups and fixed them, and they won a championship. So I think we're on the right path here. But there has to be some drama somewhere. So that game on Sunday certainly provided some drama.
Well, and yesterday's game against the Magic too was a little it was a little dicey. They fought back, and you know, definitely it went back and forth a whole bunch until they put it away in the fourth. Magic is a young, scrappy team, so that was kind of a fun game to watch. And again, they kind of ended up relying on some Stephen Curry heroics, as they have been doing in the last few weeks. It's just like, you know, they all together haven't been playing very well, and then Curry just comes through and just, you know, hits these crazy shots and kind of puts them on his back a little bit.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where if you were playing with Stephen Curry, there might be a tendency to get way too relaxed. And I do think, yeah, I think this dynamic between Kobe, between what Curry does and his heroics, and then Draymond kind of like fueling the fire emotionally. Yeah, I think Kobe was probably accurate in saying that Draymond's just as, and people have been saying this all season, but you know, Draymond has to figure out a way to make them uncomfortable. And I think he tends to do that. You know, we've heard stories about him doing that with Spates. Obviously he'll be the guy in the guys' faces if they make mistakes. Not usually in the kind of way we heard about the locker room situation with Kerr, but in a way that I think keeps guys motivated and alert. And I think having that dynamic of, whereas Kobe, I think, had all of that in one guy, where you had Kobe being the finisher and this motivator, makes him kind of a standoffish guy that can destroy teams. I think having two separate guys like this is actually really interesting. I don't know for sure. I don't know that we've seen that. I mean, have we seen that in basketball recently, where we really have two guys kind of sharing this leadership role emotionally, one guy creating the conflict and the other guy kind of being the happy-go-lucky finisher? I mean, I guess the Celtics come to mind in a way. I mean, it's the Celtics team with maybe KG and Pierce to an extent. no, but seriously, it's really interesting. Interesting, like, yin-yang dynamic that you don't normally see, because we're so used to seeing our superstars, our superheroes being the total center of gravity. And these two guys are really sharing a lot of that. And it's interesting. And, yeah, Curry's the closer, but I think maybe Draymond's important. And I look forward to seeing how this works in the playoffs, because they are clearly a team that's bored and struggling to focus right now.
It's pretty interesting thinking about that dynamic for other teams. And, like, you know, the Spurs, they don't have the player that has the drive characteristic, like the Draymond characteristic. It's,
right.
It's more Greg Popovich, right? And then so, like, he's providing that fuel, and then the players need to perform and you know, do the kind of play the Curry role. And thinking about Oklahoma City, they didn't really have that in a coach, and still don't, right? So then you're looking at their two stars. They're not really bringing those, like, you know, that kind of pair of characteristics that that complement each other.
Right.
They both have kind of the whole package, and then end up, you know, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't, right?
Right.
Yeah. I think that with Oklahoma, you can really see that they still don't always know who's going to take the last shot. I mean, it could be either one of those guys, and they haven't figured out a system where, like, you know, obviously Curry is the finisher, and Draymond, like you were saying, is the go-getter, get up and get in everybody's faces. But, like, yeah, I think, like, it gets tricky when you have a clash of personalities where people's roles aren't very well defined. Like, you had the same thing in LA with Kobe and Shaq. And I'd say that, another synergistic pairing, of course, is Pippen and Jordan. But that was, like, very, very different insofar that Pippen was much more reserved and did a different thing for the team. And Jordan kind of was the finisher and the motivator. But
right.
I don't know. It's just interesting to think about pairs of teammates that seem so dissimilar and yet, like, meshed together so perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
He was listening to, I don't remember what podcast it was now, pretty recently. And there was a conversation about the Portland Trailblazers, and we can talk more about them too, because we've got a game coming up. But the idea that you know, Dame Lillard was who he is last year, and maybe the year before too. But the fact that Aldridge was there, as kind of the de facto leader and the de facto like all-star who's you know, he's the man, he's the one that's going to be calling the shots in the end. And Dame is not a guy who was going to like go over his head to like usurp his leadership or anything like that. But,
right.
But that was, you know, that's more his natural like state of being. And he was kind of, you know, destined to be that leader. And they're, I think they're really kind of flourishing under him more so than they did with Aldridge, even with a lesser roster around him. And it's kind of interesting where, you know, I for so long with Oklahoma City, it was like people that didn't think that, you know, that Durant and Westbrook could get along, and they needed to be separated. And I always kind of shoo that away. It seems so dumb because they're both so talented and they'll make it work. But, you know, I mean, there is something to be said for like what would happen if Westbrook is the best player on his team? Like he thinks he's the best player right now and he's not. But what would happen if he actually was, like, how much different would that team kind of evolve and revolve around him and be able to put the pieces in place that, you know, he could kind of be that guy leader without this second guessing that probably has to happen like constantly on that team.
Yeah. I mean, I would love to see that. I don't know if it's ever going to happen. I mean, I feel like at some point they're not going to play their whole careers together, I think. But I wonder if it's going to happen in OKC or if he goes somewhere else or, you know, I mean, of course, like the world would, I mean, you got a glimpse of that last year too, when he was playing out of his mind, like going down the stretch towards the playoffs and putting up just insane games.
Yeah. Triple doubles every couple of games.
Yeah.
Switching gears a little bit to something completely different, we might as well just jump into this now because really everybody who was listening last week and you know will know that the reason we're talking this week is about one man, one reason, and that's Harrison Barnes. I've just
Can you give us a drum roll, Bram.
One hand.
I feel
right?
like we really need to build this up.
I don't Can have I do anything like groundbreaking, shattering to talk about here, but it just kind of
let open the floodgates and let it all flow out.
Okay, so here's the thing: like we talked about, like since the All-Star break, team hasn't been playing well, and there have been like a number of opportunities. Every game, pretty much, there's an opportunity for somebody to step up, right? For somebody to kind of like be a stopgap when Steph isn't doing his thing or when he's not on the court. There's been this opportunity there. And Barnes, like, is, you would think that he's the kind of guy who, being that he just turned down this huge contract extension last year, you know, in the summer, and somebody who, you know, would like to be a star and sees himself as a potential star, like there's all this opportunity there, and he just doesn't take it. And I think really it's that he's just not skilled enough, you know, and it's hard to keep, you know, expecting that he's going to be something different, right? He just isn't improving very much. If you look at, you know, year by year, it's kind of all over the map, and you can't really point to one thing where it's like he has definitely gotten better in this area. You know, shooting, 3-point shooting, yes, that's true. But it, you know, it's down this year, you know, than it was last year. You know, rebounding is down. Usage is up a little bit. He's playing a few more minutes, but like he's not doing anything different, and he's not doing anything better. So what, like, if he doesn't do that now, then after he turned down $64 million, like, when is he gonna do it?
I would love to see a natural experiment when someone else offers him the max and he goes elsewhere. I mean, it'd be awesome. So then we can have this question and don't have to like pay the cost of seeing it,
right?
I seriously, I don't know. I think I've been skeptical of his mythical upside since day one. So, and I'm not saying that to say that he's a meaningless part of this team generally. I think he obviously fits this team. It's really going to be a matter of dollars. And I think a matter of him, his agent saying, we need to take a discount like all these other guys have so far to, because you got to remember, I mean, Clay kind of took a discount. He's kind of playing at a discount based on what his improvement is. Curry's obviously playing at a discount. Bogut's talking about he would take less money. I mean, so, you know, Harrison Barnes has got to decide, like, is it worth taking a little bit less money at this point so that I can continue to win championships? And I'm with you. I just don't see where he's okay. His ball handling has gotten better. Statistically, there's not really a good place that would show up for him. But his ball handling has definitely gotten better. His assist percentages are higher, which is important. In terms of thinking about that, I mean, I don't know if it's actually important, but it's interesting in terms of thinking about his ball handling, because he really was not able to handle the ball at all when he was when he came in. So the fact that his assist percentage is at a career high and his turnovers percentage is at a career low, that's a good thing. But do you want to put the ball in Harrison Barnes' hands and have him create something, which is what I think some people imagine that he's doing if, like, we just free him from the Warriors, you know, oppressive system? I mean, I don't understand where that logic comes from. And to me, this is kind of maybe an antiquated way of thinking about things when you talk about cable dollars nowadays. But to me, a max player has got to be a guy who's the leader of your team on one side or the other. He's got to be the defensive leader or the offensive leader, the guy you can count on to lock down the other team's best player or count on to do something remarkable on offense. And I'm not sure Barnes is there yet. And, obviously market value is going to be an issue. Kid Gilchrist obviously got quite a bit of money. And does Barnes deserve more than Kid Gilchrist in a vacuum? Could certainly make that argument. Some people are. So the idea of him getting a max offer is something we got to get comfortable with, because somebody is going to give him a max contract, and it only takes one owner. Yeah, you know, last offseason, Damari Carroll gets 4 years, $60 million. I don't think anybody really expected that. I could be wrong. But I think it's one of those things where you just never know. Do I think Barnes will get more championship pedigree? People still are enamored with his upside. I wouldn't be shocked. But where is a good question? Charlotte?
Yeah, I was just looking at Charlotte, and it kind of depends on whether they think he can play power forward full time.
Yeah.
Which, you know, maybe he should, honestly.
Yeah, I think he probably should.
And you know, hometown guy, or, you know, at least college guy, North Carolina, yeah. so that would make some sense. And always desperate to, like, show that they're improving and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think that UNC fans have a love-hate relationship with him too. Like, right. He's never gone anywhere and just satisfied somebody completely.
Right, because he's always been way overhyped. I mean, so you're probably right about that. And coming to Charlotte would probably just be even more pressure. Championship player Harrison Barnes comes back to Charlotte to save the team. I mean, then he would fail those expectations too. I mean, so it's like, yeah, everything he does is about expectations, and it's unfortunate because they just he is a solid player. I don't think there's any question about that. I mean, I'm trying to think of teams he would fit on. So many teams, because, you know, the one thing he does have going for him is he's extremely versatile defensively. So, right. You know, you can put him on a variety of players. He can work well in a switching system, and then he can be a 3-and-D guy. He can hit threes competently now. So I think that's important. And yes, his ball handling is improving. If it were to continue improving, could you imagine him being a player who he could stick in an ISO and consistently get production from if the defense was keying in on him every night? He's so far from that right now that I don't even think it's worth considering.
It started to sound like you're talking yourself into him, Nate. Like,
I'm hyping him up for some other team.
I thought that Bram was the one that loved Harrison.
No, I'm not a fan. I'm just being generous, since, you know, you came out hard. That's about as hard as I've seen you go, Ivan.
Well, that's pretty sad. That wasn't very hard. But I'll continue, because, okay, so...
He's like, I am not done.
I am not done.
You interrupted me.
I wonder, it seems to be a certainty that he's going to get a max contract. And that might be true, but it's mind-boggling to me. Okay, going back to the things that you mentioned about his areas of improvement, his ball handling. Like, I guess it has improved. It seems like, I don't know what the empirical evidence of it is, but he can dribble. I mean, that is a thing that he is capable of doing, but it doesn't ever get him anywhere. You know, they're like, if you just watch in the games, it's like one out of every five, you know, attempts at dribbling past his man is successful. And it's usually right off the catch. And then maybe, you know, a fake right and a dribble left immediately. And then, you know, and typically on the baseline too, right? Like his drives are usually on the baseline that are successful. Otherwise he just totally gets stumped every time. Like he's not very good at moving laterally, doesn't have good enough hands to, like, you know, to kind of get low and make quick dribbles to make different, you know, decisions. He makes up his mind and, you know, he'll get like 4 feet and then have to stop and pull up and like pass it to, you know, to the outlet guy. Bogut's usually standing there just waiting for him to give him the ball back because he knows he's not going to do anything with it. It's, you know, if you just look at highlight packages, you know, he has some great, you know, put back dunks, and every so often he has that drive and he hits those corner threes, and some of that is great, but he really isn't, you know, he's not even posting up anymore, really. Like, there, he has no confidence even to take like the point guard. And when he gets switched on him, he kind of sits around, you know, makes a couple dribbles, isn't able to move guys that weigh, you know, 30 pounds less than him very often. And, you know, his value ends up being on offense, you know, one of a standstill shooter. And, you know, that's fine. It actually, it's solid. But I still think, like, so if you know, he turned down $64 million over 4 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
Something like that. So that would be like $16 million. And mm-hmm. under the new CBA, I think that, you know, which is going to raise by like 30% or something.
Mm-hmm.
I think the math comes out to that being like a $12 million contract or $11 million contract or something under today's, like, if you were to compare to today's contracts.
Right.
Like, is he worth that? Would you pay a guy?
I mean,
$12 million under this CBA?
Personally, I mean, do you remember him defending Zach Randolph in the playoffs last year? I mean,
yes.
That's just so valuable to have a guy like that, especially if you want to do small ball. He is so valuable in helping the team do that and helping them to be able to do it consistently. And then the ability to hit threes so you can spread the court and you can switch on defense. Here's where I actually fall on this, because I was being a little, trying to be nice. The deal is, I think he works well in this system because he can feast off the spacing that a guy like Curry and Klay Thompson create. And then you have a facilitator on offense like Draymond Green. And then you have Barnes's defensive versatility. So he's perfect in this system. There's probably not a better situation for him in the league right now. I mean, you can correct me if I'm wrong. I can't think of one. I really do think he's a product of that. On the flip side, I do see the defensive versatility is valuable. And I think what people are going to say is, I mean, name me another player who can give you that defensive versatility and shoot the three on the other end.
Well, you brought up DeMarre Carroll was a great bring up there because, I mean, he's the other guy, and he
didn't get paid as much.
Right. But he didn't get paid as much as Barnes turned down, because Barnes thinks Barnes has more of the, you know, the potential, the dastardly P word attached to him because of his youth. You know, I just don't see it, man. Bram, you've been quiet. We know you're writing a love letter to him right now, but, you know, read a little bit of it.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I agree with everything you guys have said. I think that it'll take care of itself insofar as that, like, the Warriors aren't gonna pay him more than they're paying Draymond or Clay. You know, it's just, they're just not going to. And I think that they feel comfortable moving forward, you know, in the future. I mean, McAdoo has proved to be very interesting defensively. I think that Kevon Looney is a really interesting potential replacement, kind of, and does everything that Draymond does, but maybe even better. You know,
that I mean, I
know
Draymond does, or
I mean, then I'm sorry, that Harrison does.
Man, I had to clean that up for you.
Thank you. Yeah, sorry. And I mean, you know, we've seen at Summer League that he can shoot, and we've seen in small stretches that Looney can really rebound the heck out of the ball. But I think with Barnes, I mean, it's just interesting, really, to me. Like, I remember where I was. We've talked about this, but like the night that all those guys were drafted, and I thought, like, man, like, you know, we were so lucky to get Barnes and to fall, you know, to have him fall to us, and for us to retain that eighth pick, and now it's like, wow, well, it's almost the entire story of that draft is Draymond Green, you know,
mm-hmm.
and to a certain extent, Festus. And I think Barnes, his time with the team has unfortunately been characterized by just a very – it's really easy for him to disappear mm-hmm. for almost like whole games or multiple games in a row. And, I mean, people have tweeted – this obviously isn't a new thought, but sometimes you're watching the game and you're like, wait, Harrison's been out there – like, how many minutes did he play? And, like, I don't remember him doing a single thing, like, good or bad. Or sometimes, I guess, Ivan remembers all the bad stuff. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, in my heart, like, I have, like, a emotional attachment to that draft, and I want them to keep all the guys around because we have drafted this – crazy super team, and it was all, you know, in-house. That I think that's really rare, but I'm not sure if they're going to be able to. I think that unless he accepts the same deal they offered, like they're not, I don't think they're going to go above that, and he's not going to suddenly go lower than that, you know.
Right.
So I think it's at an impasse of sorts, and you know, I don't know how deeply he's thinking about that. I'm sure it's in the back of his head. I'm sure he wishes he hadn't gotten hurt at the beginning of the year, because I think that he was playing a lot better pre-injury, like pre-sprain. And, you know, it's contract year. Like, that's the risk you take when you turn down money like that. You're betting on yourself. And unfortunately for him, I think it, even though, and here we are still talking about the fact that somebody's going to offer him a max. So, I don't know, crazier things have happened.
Yeah, only takes one.
Well, speaking of the injury too, like, I mean, and Nate asked the question, like, who's going to replace him? Well, Brandon Rush did a really nice job. I mean, the Warriors sure did not really fall off while Barnes was out, and they had Rush in, and offensively he was just fine in that look. Defensively, he's not going to go down and guard Zach Randolph if you need him to. But I mean, it's not. Nobody's thinking about offering Brandon Rush a max deal. You know what I mean? It's just odd that there's this like mystique about him still. And mm-hmm. and I feel like watching him for 4 years, it's, I don't really understand it anymore. And I could see it in the first three. And now it's just like you said, he disappears in games that he really shouldn't, you know, that there are just these opportunities for him to appear, to make an appearance and to make his presence felt. And you know, you look at Sean Livingston, who's like, you know, I think just as defensively versatile, although he can't switch on to power forwards, but and he can't shoot threes, but like, you know, I think he is much more vital to the Warriors play than Barnes is. And I'd rather throw some money his way to keep him, you know?
When he's on the court, you always know he's on the court.
Right.
Like, and obviously he's handling the ball, you know, for the vast majority of the time he's out there. But it's just like one of those guys where he just has a very calming, like very serene, but like very aware presence that he's like very much part of the inner machinations of all the plays, you know? And with Barnes, yeah, I mean, but again, like the thing about throwing money at Livingston is, again, why people want to pay Barnes is he's still young.
Right.
And he, you know, for the most part hasn't had too much wear and tear on his body, although this last injury. But like, it's the same thing with Rush. I mean, Rush is 30 now, right?
Yeah, I think here's, I mean, bottom line for me is it is so rare you see a player and again, you guys can correct me if I'm wrong on this, it's so rare that you see a player that can develop the ball handling skills that Barnes needs to develop to be a successful offensive player. And I think that's just always going to be a limiting factor. Like, there are players who come into the league who are out of control, they're turnover prone, and you can maybe tame those guys. But if a guy comes in and just doesn't have the ball handling ability, I just cannot remember a guy who developed the ball handling ability and confidence. And Barnes has clearly made strides. I'm just struggling to figure out what that developmental trajectory looks like and how close he is to the ceiling. I think maybe over time we could see a slightly better version of what he is now, but I don't see like a huge leap in ball handling to make him a dynamic offensive player that's going to warrant someone making him, you know, the guy on a good team.
Right.
It's interesting. I know people in the past have brought up Antoine Jameson to me as someone who's improved his ball handling in the league. And I guess, but I mean, Antoine Jameson was a different player. I mean, he was a totally different guy, a totally different player. And it's kind of like a pointless comparison to me.
Well, one thing about Barnes's ball handling, and I think about ball handling and how useful it is. And I think a thing that Barnes really struggles with, or I'll rephrase that, he's terrible at, is being deceptive. You know, very few things he does on the court you don't know are going to happen. And so he's not able to, you know, he has no crossover to speak of. But even if he like developed the, you know, the actual ball handling, you know, technically proficient ball handling with, you know, being able to dribble left and right equally, does he have quick enough feet? Does he have enough, other kind of deceptive qualities where he's going to get by a guy, or he's going to trick his guy, or he's going to go to the other hand when he gets to the basket and he doesn't finish well, with either hand? It's like, you know, how is that even going to translate? And Antoine had those like little push shots. I don't even know how to describe them, where he was able to get shots up before the defender really knew what was happening and how he was going to block that off. And he did scoop shots and he did hooks, and he had a lot of like kind of deceptive touch around the basket that he could kind of make up for his lack of ball handling, with, you know, spin moves and things too. Like he had some good moves around the basket that you just didn't necessarily know how to guard. And everybody knows how to guard Harrison. Like it's just not.
I mean, you're seeing more. What we're seeing more of this year is we are seeing more of the dunk off the drive from the wing. I mean, we've seen a few of those this year. I have not been keeping count of how many, but there are a few times where he'll get an isolation situation, or they're running something on the weak side. He'll get the ball on the wing, take a jab step or two, and it's 1-2 dribble, and he can get up and dunk. And you know, he can explode. Like he's a somewhat explosive leaper, actually, and he's got plenty of posterized people to attest to that. But I agree with you. I mean, it's not like he's not putting on anybody on skates.
Not yet. You guys start believing, man.
You still haven't really made the case for us to believe, but
just in your heart, just open your heart to believe. Wow. And then Harrison will fill that space with his skating.
Wow.
No, I don't think that, I hope I'm proved wrong. I mean, maybe he goes somewhere else and he turns into a really awesome player and we can root for him from afar. But I don't see his ceiling. And again, this is just what you guys have said, but like, I could see him being the number one option, but I think it would be on a team that was like maybe the eighth seed in the East or, you know, something like that.
See, I
don't think they make the playoffs.
Yeah, me neither. I can't see him being the top guy on a playoff team.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you look at like Detroit and Washington are 9-10. So, I mean, yeah. Do you see him as being better than John Wall? You
know, I can't see him as being as a number two, or I don't even know if he's a number three on a playoff team. Like, and that's what I keep going back to is like, how much are you going to pay a guy who's probably your fourth best player? Like, it just it
would be an albatross contract within a year.
Yeah.
Or two.
There would still be the hope because you give him the contract when he's 24 and, you know, it lasts four or five seasons. And then you're like, well, he's going to be in his prime toward the end of that contract. So maybe it'll that's when it'll pay off. But in the meantime, it's just going to be this oh, man, I wish we had an extra $5 million to pay the next, Sean Livingston coming down the road. Right. So I don't know. Good to get that off my chest, though. Thanks, guys. Let's talk a little bit about. We're 20 games away from the end of the season, and we just mentioned playoffs, and I don't know if it's too early or not yet to start talking about the Western Conference kind of playoff positioning and where the Warriors are going to stand there and who's going to make it and who's not. It's starting to. I mean, it's pretty tight in there, but I don't think that there's going to be that much drama at the bottom of the. Of the pecking order, at least as much as some might have assumed. With the Pelicans were supposed to be in the mix, and the Jazz are certainly there. I think they're the only team that that has a possibility of knocking off one of the existing playoff teams. But right now, as we stand, eighth seed is the Rockets. Jazz are the ninth seed. They're just two games behind them, one and a half games behind actually. And then the Trailblazers at 7, the Mavericks at 6, the Grizzlies at 5, which is actually surprising after their terrible start, right past the Clippers, who are the fourth seed right now. Is there any, any drama there that you see? Do you think that the Jazz are going to, knock one of those teams off? Are the Mavericks going to actually, hold in there and keep a sixth seed or, anything that you guys think might happen? And really, I guess the ultimate question is, who do you want to see in the eighth seed first round?
I don't want to see Portland in the first round.
No.
I so deeply agree with that.
Yeah.
I would love to see Portland and San Antonio beat up each other in the first round. Yeah. The way it is right now.
Yeah. I mean, I just think they're a team that would extend. So, I mean, I want a team ideally that the Warriors could just sweep. Houston looks pretty attractive there.
That has.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, how awesome would that be to beat Houston again in the first round? I just so despise their style of play. I mean, they're so unwatchable, and I just to sweep them out of the playoffs in the first round this year after the Western Conference Finals last year, and all of James Harden's bluster about how he deserved MVP and all this nonsense. I think I would thoroughly enjoy that. And they haven't proven able to really compete with the Warriors in any serious way this year.
I just had a thought. You know who's crazy enough, and I don't know what the money situation is exactly down there, but I could totally see Daryl Morey maxing out Barnes. Like, couldn't you see him in a Houston outfit next year? So, they cut ties with Dwight, and they set up this new, big two between
– Harden and Barnes.
Harden and Barnes.
It would be interesting. I mean, that's certainly a place where, Harden would dribble around and then Barnes would just stand and take threes every now and then. Yeah, I could see that working. Working in my own, our advantage.
Right.
I mean, Houston is obviously Houston is also a dangerous team. I'm kind of mocking them because I for whatever reason, really enjoy their pain, but they're dangerous. Utah's just my thing with Utah is they've also played the Warriors really tough this year. So again, I'm trying to think of the easiest first round matchup. I'm not sure that would be like they said about the Pelicans last year. Yes, it was quick, but it wasn't necessarily the easiest series. I kind of see the Jazz as the same.
If Dallas somehow fell back, that would be maybe my most preferable matchup.
Yeah.
Although then the karma of the inverse we believe would be in play though.
Yeah, let's avoid that.
Oh boy.
Yeah, let's avoid that altogether.
I totally agree. Like, I'd rather see the Rockets than the Jazz, and, yeah. and I'd probably still rather see the Rockets than the Mavericks, maybe only because of that, although it's close. Really, I mean, looking at it right now, I kind of wish it stood pat, because you're right. San Antonio against the Blazers in the first round would be awesome. The Warriors playing the Rockets and knocking the Rockets off in the first round, and then playing the Clippers in the second round and knocking the Clippers out. That's a, you know, Rockets, yeah. Clippers.
This is a dream scenario right there. That is just like, that would be such a satisfying playoff. So satisfying. I put my hater hat on and it would just be rocking in the city with my hater hat, doing my little dance. Wonderful.
I'm going to make you a hat that just says Nate hates.
Oh, just hater. Just on the front. Just hater. Doesn't need to say anything else. I
hate Parham.
Hate Parham. Yeah.
Hate Parham. I just. That's some quality stuff right there. Yeah, well, what about like a picture of like Harden crying, or you don't want any
that could work
little...
too. Anything. Yeah. Anything hateful.
This has maybe been our most hateful podcast of all time.
It really has. It really
embrace has the darkness.
So how? What is it about success that just makes you this hateful? I mean, I are we just bored? So we're not. We've just turned hateful now. I don't know. I think it's a tough one. I think clearly the eight seeds in the West this year are. I mean, any one of those teams has a claim that they could play the Warriors pretty tough. I just think, in the end, Houston's probably the team that has. I do agree with Dallas. I see your point about Dallas, but I think Houston, they're a well coached team.
Yeah, they are.
I think they know their identity well. They're gonna be motivated no matter what, because you know who knows when Dirk is gonna go.
Right.
So that has the makings of a tougher series. Give me Houston.
The point about coaching is great in the playoffs too, because
it matters
so much more. I think
Houston, they're adrift in that department.
They
in
are
certain ways. So,
you know, the fact that they, you know, the Ty Lawson thing, just, you know, the one thing that everybody that you know, was maybe, I mean, I'll say I thought Ty Lawson would make that team better. I didn't know how they would balance having him on the court with Harden, because I just didn't see how those two ball dominant players would work together. But that proved to be a complete disaster. And like, you know, that was their one saving grace this year that would make them better or somehow make them a real challenge, and it's failed, and they had to release the guy. I mean, that's nuts. I mean, they're just in total chaos this year, and it's amazing to see how far they've fallen so quickly. You know, you would have thought there would have been more there, but I'm satisfied. James Harden, that nonsense game that he plays. I cannot watch that. It's hard for me to decide whether I hate watching the Clippers or Rockets more. I'm so dead serious. The reason I just don't like the Clippers and their whining and flopping around the court. But like in terms of just if you took the jerseys off, and I didn't know who these guys were. Just watching Houston play basketball with Harden just like crashing into people, and the refs aren't calling that anymore this year. They're just not giving the calls as often, and like just watching him crash into people. I mean, it's not entertaining basketball.
Yep.
So let's dispose of both of them, get to the Spurs in the Western Conference Finals, and I will make no picks of what happens there. Cause I've, how can you ever count the Spurs out of anything?
Never.
Yeah.
Yeah. That series could probably would go seven. But there is a long road ahead until any of that becomes reality. But it's getting closer and closer as we move forward.
Yep, and we're going to be talking about the Spurs a lot more coming up in the next month or so. We've got, you know, remember, we've only played the Spurs once this year. So March 19th and then a couple like right at the end of the season. So those Spurs matchups are going to be huge. Luckily, we don't have to watch the Houston Rockets play anymore. I think we swept them, so... done with that series, and we can call this podcast a day too. You can subscribe to it on iTunes, Stitcher, Blog Talk Radio.
Haters paradise today.
Yeah,
the all haters episode. Well, thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time on Golden State of Mind, guys.
A Napa guy knows more isn't always better, unless we're talking about full-size vans. These beasts do more than get you from A to B. They have so much space a man can live in it. With shag carpeting, waterbed, and a sweet lava lamp, these mobile abodes have all the comforts of home. With quality parts and plenty of Napa know-how, you can keep the original tiny house running longer, stronger. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how.